This is Fresh Air. Today we're all trying to understand how the Clinton health care plan would affect the quality of health care and the price we pay for it. We invited Uwe Reinhardt to analyze the plan. Reinhardt is an expert on health care policy in the U.S. and around the world. He's a professor of political economy at Princeton University and serves on the Physician Payment Review Commission, which advises Congress on medical payments to doctors, malpractice, and health care reform. Under the Clinton program, there would be three types of health insurance plans. An HMO-type plan would be the cheapest, but you would be limited to the doctors who are part of the organization. In a preferred provider plan, you would also be part of a group, but for an extra fee, you could consult outside doctors. The most expensive plan, fee-for-service, would offer free choice of doctors and hospitals. Some people are concerned that with the basic HMO plan, you not only wouldn't be able to choose your doctor, but your doctor might spend less time with you and be pressured to cut corners to save money.
There is the potential for that, to be sure, although doctors on fee-for-service who want to charge a lot of fees hurry you in and out as well. We shouldn't overlook that. But there is no question that when a physician or group of physicians get paid a lump sum at the beginning of the year, and for that they owe you all necessary health services, there is the danger that they will underserve you, that they will not give you a CAT scan when perhaps it should have been given, or they will hurry you in and out in order to meet a prescribed quota of patients per day. That is definitely a possibility.
How do other countries handle choice when it comes to doctors?
Other countries will have give their patients more choice. In Canada, for example, you get an insurance card. When you are sick, you have completely free choice of doctor and hospital in your community. You're not confined to any plan. That is so in France, and it is so in Germany, and it is so in Holland. This locking in of patients into a health plan is a uniquely American thing.
As President Clinton pointed out last night, we're spending about 14% of the gross national product on our health care, whereas a lot of other countries are spending 9% and guaranteeing their citizens a lot more than what we're guaranteed. Why are costs so high in the United States? And then we'll see if you think that this new proposal addresses those problems.
There are three factors I could mention. The first one, in defense of our medical system, it is asked to do jobs that Canadian and German healthcare providers don't have to serve. And that is to serve as the vacuum cleaner that sweeps off our streets the social pathos our lifestyle begets. In Canada, teenagers don't have submachine guns. We allow this. Not legally, but, you know, teenagers have them. They don't have the crack problem, so we do have more trauma. Secondly, our providers, our doctors, our nurses, and our health economists, if I may add, are better paid than our counterparts in Germany, France, or the United States. Everyone who works in healthcare is very well paid in this country, and that adds money. And thirdly, our system is so horrendously complex and paper-happy that we spend billions, probably $100 billion, needlessly on paperwork that other countries simply don't tolerate. They run their systems on the principle KISS, keep it simple, stupid. The American way is always to make everything very complex, and that costs money.
Okay, so under the Clinton proposal, do we solve any of these problems? We won't solve the Uzi problem. We won't solve the problem of teenagers with automatic weapons in the streets. You also said doctors get paid more here than in other countries. Does the Clinton administration proposal address that? Is that something you think we should change in the first place?
Well, there isn't that much mileage in it, but I do believe that doctors will get paid less under the Clinton plan, particularly specialists who got used to the $300,000-$500,000 net income. They will see that whittled away probably in half. Primary care specialists, internists, general practitioners probably will see their income stable or even go up a little bit, but the super specialists will see their income decline. There will be some reduction in the paper war, but not as much as the president supposes. Your typical for-profit health maintenance organization now burns about 20 cents of every premium dollar on administration, marketing, and profits. That is, for every dollar premium a business or families pay to an HMO, only 80 cents buys health care. That is an awful lot of paper still, and unless they manage to get this down, ours will still be the most paper-hungry, administratively top-heavy health system in the world.
Do you think the Clinton proposal would work financially? Do you think the numbers work out?
If I had to bet my own money, I would say these are probably optimistic estimates. But if I were on the Clinton team, I'd, with a straight face, defend them because you have actuaries who sign off on them. Historically, these actuaries have always been wrong. They underestimated the cost of the Medicare program vastly. They vastly underestimated the cost of the renal dialysis program. My sense is they are vastly underestimating the cost of this program as well. But politically, you have to start somewhere, and if I were working for the president, I would, with a straight face, defend these numbers.
My guest is Uwe Reinhardt, and he's a professor of political economy at Princeton University. He also serves on the Physician Payment Review Commission, which advises Congress on Medicare payments as well as health care policy and health reform. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about the Clinton administration health care policy proposal, and my guest is Uwe Reinhardt, who is a professor of political economy at Princeton University. Something else that's responsible for the high cost of health care is all the new high-tech diagnostic machinery that we have, like MRIs, and the new high-tech surgeries like hip replacement, and the extraordinary measures that we're able to take to extend life. This is all very expensive. Is that or should that be addressed in a health policy?
Well, the beauty of the concept of managed competition is that you don't have to address it in a fishbowl and this debate openly or not. Will we allow this procedure? Will we pay for this procedure or not? Because the health maintenance organizations, the health plans, they will make a lot of these choices in the confines of their boardrooms and their clinics. So an awful lot of these decisions to withhold or not to withhold are done on an ad hoc basis, invisibly, and therefore don't become a political hot potato. That is, of course, the idea. There should be no mistake about it. The intent is that ultimately such a system will ration health care in the sense that it leads to the withholding of beneficial health care. But I would also add, and this will shock you, every economist with a PhD would tell you that the optimal health system is one that rations health care.
Why?
This is what we teach, because we say the optimal system is one that goes only to the point where the extra benefit from an additional procedure covers the extra cost. Since these costs are always positive, you can actually prove that in an optimal state, you will withhold procedures that were marginally beneficial. It simply said, yes, they are beneficial, but they're not worth the cost. Concretely explained, you go with a headache to a doctor, you've had it for 2 weeks. You are worried. The doctor said, I think you're okay. However, if I did an MRI, we would even know more about what's going on inside your head, but I think you are right. You see, an economist would say probably at the margin, the $1,000 cost of that MRI isn't justified by the extra certainty. That's how an economist would reason, at least as long as that economist is vertical and not the patient.
Right.
Patients, of course, view this quite differently.
But this is, instead of making decisions like this in terms of like ethical debate, it's more of like bottom line debate.
Absolutely, yes.
Is that the way to do it?
Well, yes, that is the way economists would advocate it should be done. There should be an organization that is forced through a budget, the capitation that patients pay in, to make these hard calls as they go.
Do you think we're going to have a class system within the insurance system?
Oh, I think so. I think over time it'll develop that, particularly as healthcare becomes ever more expensive and the politicians pull the purse strings for subsidies to the poor ever tighter. I think there is no question in my mind that ultimately the managed competition structure will give you a tiered system, tiered by income class. Maybe that's its advantage. I have come to conclude that Americans would never accept an egalitarian health system, that the only thing they'd ever accept is something that gives the well-to-do their Disneyland in medicine and yet does not force the well-to-do to subsidize for the poor such expensive Disneyland care. And managed competition gives you that.
If you're unemployed, who is actually paying for your policy? And how much will you have to pay yourself?
Under the Clinton plan, if you are unemployed, you would have to register with the Health Alliance, and they would charge you a premium that is pegged on your income. If you're dirt poor, you basically get totally free care. You just register, you get a card, you are fully insured, you can choose an HMO, and the cost of that is simply smeared over everyone else who is in that Health Alliance.
Now, I know we have probably a disproportionately high number of freelance writers and artists listening today. What kind of deal do they get under the new system?
Well, they get the same deal. They would have to, by law, register with the Health Alliance, and they would have to have a card. That would be the law. Not to do that would be as illegal as not paying income taxes. Now, a freelance artist, for example, who makes $20,000, would have to go to the Alliance and pay a premium, maybe on an annual basis. They would say you should contribute at least 8% of your income or 6% of your income. And they would have to write a check for that amount. And the rest would be absorbed by the Health Alliance. They would actually get a federal subsidy out of a federal pot for that shortfall.
So it would depend on their income?
It would depend on their income. And particularly those people would be infinitely better off under the Clinton plan. Although, see, for instance, when you go to a TV studio, you get makeup put on. Those are usually freelancers. And I always ask, are you insured? And almost always they say, no, I can't afford the premium.
Mm-hmm.
Well, under the Clinton plan, they'll be both better and worse off. Worse off in the sense they must buy this card at X percent of the income. They may have to lay out $1,500, which now they don't spend at all. But now, if they wanted insurance, they might have to pay $3,000. Well, the Clintons will give it to them for $1,500. So in some respects, they're better off. But the fact that they have to, by law, buy the card may make some of them feel put upon.
So it's interesting. So you have no choice. You'd have to be insured.
Absolutely. And I agree totally with the president's analysis of that. This freeloading of saying, I'm a healthy yuppie, I'm not going to pay insurance, and then you get hit by a car and you're a $200,000 case and everyone else but you pays, that really isn't fair.
My guest is Uwe Reinhardt, professor of political economy at Princeton University. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Uwe Reinhardt, a professor of political economy at Princeton University and an expert on healthcare policy in the U.S. and around the world. Let's look at the HMO part of the system, the part that would be least expensive, where you'd have minimal choice of doctors. I'm sure everybody is wondering, what will the quality of medical care be in that bottom tier of the program? Will there be incentives for doctors to participate in such a program? What would be in it for the doctors to be in the HMO-type program as opposed to a program where they could see probably the wealthier clients who have unlimited choice?
Well, for one, the market can only absorb so many doctors who cater only to wealthy people because God has arranged the world so that there are few wealthy people. So there are limits to to the number of doctors who can clip toenails for rich people. Most of them will have to find work in HMOs of various sorts, and there are also many American doctors who actually are ethically driven to help the poor. Let's not forget that. Doctors don't just go after money. There are many, many doctors.
That's very true, and I'm glad you're saying
that. Yeah, who really want to help patients. So I wouldn't worry about that, nor would I worry about the notion that low-cost HMOs are necessarily low-quality HMOs. There's actually not that clear a relationship between how much we spend on healthcare and how much what the quality is. The president pointed out the fascinating Pennsylvania data that shows that the clinical outcome of coronary bypass surgery is completely unrelated to what you pay for that.
Is there something you would worry about instead?
Well, I would worry a little bit about whether the low-cost HMO has all of its facilities in low-income areas and is staffed chiefly with foreign medical graduates whose language facility may not match the patients that they serve. I would worry about the quality of the facilities. How long do you have to wait for a CAT scan and an MRI? You know, there are indicators you could look at to see whether these HMOs are welching or not. That is, of course, what the accountability part is supposed to take care of. There are supposed to be surveys by the Health Alliance of each plan's patients where they are supposed to mark down, are you satisfied with the service, the way we have it in hotels. And there are ultimately, in the 21st century, to be clinical outcome studies where you actually say, in this cheap HMO, do patients who get coronary bypass surgery there die at a higher rate than in HMOs whose premiums are higher? So that you can actually say whether the clinical quality is related to the premium. So, you know, there are these safeguards in it, at least in theory. How this works in practice is an open question, I'd have to admit.
So you think that there might be a kind of neighborhood-by-neighborhood difference in HMOs, that the HMO clinics in the poor, the HMO programs in the poorer neighborhoods might not be as good as the ones in the more middle-class neighborhoods?
Yes, I would say that unambiguously, and I only have to look at New Jersey's high schools. If you look at schools in where I live, Princeton, West Windsor, those schools are actually cheaper than the inner city schools. And yet, if you look at the plan, it is a horror case in the inner cities or in New York. And that's something that one does have to worry about. Very often, human services facilities in low-income areas are actually more expensive than in well-to-do areas.
Well, as you said, there's supposed to be some kind of monitor to make sure that good health care is guaranteed to people. What kind of confidence do you have in a system that would monitor the health care programs?
Well, again, you know, one does not want to argue against the president, and given he's worked so hard on it, wish him well. But when you look at the public school system, it is discouraging. All these monitors are supposed to be there. And yet, I know in a New Jersey case very well, the most expensive schools have the worst outcomes, the worst plant, and you ask, who are the monitors? It ultimately depends on the quality of the people who do the monitoring. Who is going to staff the health alliances that the states are to create? Are they the same kind of people who run the New York City School Board or the New Jersey School Boards? If so, I can only say wish us luck. Or are there people of a superior cut?
When you look at the pros and the cons of the Clinton healthcare proposal, do you end up supporting it?
I would end up supporting it because I view it, I always say it's the best, second best solution in my view. I think if you compare, project yourself to the year 2005, and supposing we go down this path that the president has mapped out, and supposing Canada stays on its system, which is very simple, gives people free choice of doctor when they're sick, but the Canadians spend more. Supposing the Canadians by the year 2005 spent, say, 13% of the GMP on healthcare, and we with our system spent 17%. I'm utterly convinced that the Canadian doctors and patients both would be happier than American doctors and patients will be in this very complicated system. But I also am convinced that the United States simply would never adopt a Canadian-style system. There are some things other countries can culturally afford that we just cannot do. And therefore, this may be the best that we can get through the Congress, and therefore I support it.
And it will be an improvement over what we have now?
It'll be a vast improvement over what we have now. I was on a Canadian television program this morning, and I said, basically, we're in a swamp with alligators, and Clinton is trying to lead us out of that. And to that extent, I think he really has made a major contribution. President Bush, by contrast, it was well known that he said to his staff, look busy, but don't do anything. This is a swamp I don't want to get into. But he didn't realize he was already in it. And that is, of course, I think, one major reason he lost the election. He thought health reform leads him into a swamp. Clinton understood we're in a swamp, and we have to lead people out. And I think that's why he won, and that is why he honorably owns up to it. And whether you agree with every detail, I salute him for it, and I thank him for doing what he did.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
It's been my pleasure.
Uwe Reinhardt is a professor of political economy at Princeton University.